The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Jared in for Gil, top of the hour here on Thursday. We appreciate the time on a numbers game. Wyatt in for Kelly. This is the preseason. You get the second stringers here today and tomorrow. Kelly's actually on a nice vacation. You won't see him again until I think the end of next week.
I'm in all of next week.
So
for
Kelly's
Gil.
In for the next. Well, out for the next week.
So to pull the curtain back, Kelly.
Good for you, Kelly.
I think he's going to a wedding, but he looked at the weather forecast and there's a potential hurricane that might hit Florida. And he goes, it never fails me. Whenever I fly back home, there's a hurricane potentially.
Himself some extra time. Yeah. So Kelly and I are both from Florida. Not me originally. I moved there when I was younger. My family is down there now. My mom lives in Boca. Hi, Mom. And my sister is in Fort Lauderdale. So I'm down there very often. Of course, I used to work at FAU. That's where Kelly and I kind of bonded a little bit when they made their Final Four run a couple years ago.
Who's the radio announcer for?
Ken Lavica.
Yes,
fantastic.
Yes. I like that.
So the first ever college football game I ever called was with Ken. It was in college. I was a junior at Penn State. First professional, when I was a professional out in the actual working world and not a college student, was in 2000, and I believe it was the 2010 football season, FAU at Louisiana Monroe. And I was Ken Lavica and I. There's a picture of it. I actually tweeted it out when they made their run a couple years ago. Ken and I, go back years again, 2010. We're in 2024. Ken and I used to hang out after games. I called the women's games. He called the men's games on the basketball side at FAU. We used to go to Duffy's down the street after the games. Great dude. Awesome. I believe he is still doing work in that part of the country. I don't think he's still working for FAU.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think he moved on from the station that he was at because they changed rights. They changed marketing partnerships last year.
Okay. I think it's Learfield is the one. I don't know the other one.
I don't know how the thing. You know how it is with this business. it changes a lot. But long story short, Ken is fantastic. And Kelly, of course, we have a fun FAU connection here at the network, which is really cool. All right, let's pivot to some NFL news. We just got word of this happening in Browns camp, and this is really tough news. Dante Foreman, who is, I believe, now the number one running back on the depth chart with Chubb on PUP. I don't know if there's someone else in Cleveland that is currently at the top of the chart, but he was one of the more exciting players in the backfield for the Browns this year. Let me pull up the depth chart really quick and see who else is in the backfield. No, it's Jerome Ford and Foreman. Those are the two guys. So, Foreman just got carted off the field. Very scary scenario. Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns, beat writer for Cleveland.com, Dante Foreman injured during a kickoff drill, being immobilized and taken off on a board, which is really scary. And I did read that he was also carted off in an ambulance. So, and the part that I think is intriguing here, none of this is intriguing, but the part that raised my eyebrows, during a kickoff drill, well, the whole reason we changed these kickoff rules was to be more safe. And now we have people getting carted off in practice in ambulances because of the kickoff drill. I think the kickoff rule, and I've gone back and forth about this, and we talked to Frank Schwab yesterday, who's very high on the Browns. I'm not as high on the Browns as Frank is. He picked them to go to the Super Bowl. And the reason that I'm not as high on the Browns as Frank is I just don't trust Deshaun Watson. I think the rest of the roster is great. I think their defense is a top 10 unit, probably a top 5 unit, but I do not trust Deshaun Watson, so it's really hard for me to back a team when I don't trust the quarterback. But with Chubb out, and now Foreman obviously seriously injured, there's just a lot of questions on this Cleveland offense. I like the receiving group. I like what they did with Jerry Jeudy. Obviously, I love Amari Cooper. Offensive line's good, but quarterback and running back, big questions now. And this is hard to really wrap your head around if Foreman's really seriously injured.
Agreed on that with the quarterback situation is when you have question marks and you don't have the confidence, it really limits a team from their potential. Obviously, I don't want to bring up your Jets, but it's like
– No, that you bring them up. That's the perfect case because they were a 7-win team last year with arguably the worst quarterback situation in the league.
Yeah. It's like, you know, with Deshaun Watson, here's the first thing. He's got to stay healthy. One, you got to be out on the field. – Two is
even
just,
when he was healthy, he didn't look good last year.
It was the game against – it was the second half against the Ravens where he played, like, lights out. And people said if he just plays like that or somewhat resembling that, this is going to be a playoff-worthy team. That's the big thing with this Browns team. Can Deshaun Watson play to the level that he was in Houston and why the Browns signed him to such a big deal, which right now is looking like one of the worst deals in NFL history?
It is. It really is. I would – probably lay off the Cleveland number at this point. I think there is some excitement, but I'm not really that excited. I don't share in Frank Schwab's excitement for Cleveland this year. I'm trying to pull up the stats for Deshaun Watson to check how his efficiency numbers were last year. If I recall, they were bottom barrel type stuff. Yeah, so Watson last year amongst qualified quarterbacks ranked 25th out of 41 in terms of the EPA and the efficiency numbers. He ranked dead even with Joe Flacco, pretty much the same amount of snaps, too. Watson took 223 snaps last year. Flacco took 227. And they both finished pretty much around the same with their efficiency grades and their success rates and their completion rates. And there was very little separating those two players. That is... yeah, and that's very unsettling, I would say, for a Browns fan.
And looking at it here, Deshaun Watson, in 2 years as the starting quarterback for the Browns, has started just a combined 12 games, although he is 6-4 in those games, but he's thrown for just 14 touchdown passes. Like, that is – he needs to find a way to stay healthy. And you know, the Browns, they don't have that safety valve they had last year, you know, the surprise, the comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco. So it's really key if – Deshaun can just stay on the field and play like we saw him play in Houston.
Yeah.
And this is like this. You can agree to disagree with me. I think this is probably the toughest division in football.
It is. Well, we were talking about it yesterday, and I was wrong about this. I thought it was the South that was the most compressed. Carolina actually is one of the bigger laggards, though. This is the most compressed division in the NFL. And to be fair, the Ravens were 11.5, and they were bet under. And that's why they're at 10.5 now. So the Ravens opened a little higher, but doesn't matter. Right now, where we currently sit market-wide, you can bet the top team in the division and the bottom team in the division, and there's only two wins separating those four teams.
Yeah, this division is tough. I can't – and also, when you look at the Steelers, we don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback. It almost feels like maybe Justin Fields is going to get
Russell
at least some good PT time.
Yeah, I'm sure Fields will see the field, but Russ is going to be the starter. I think they signed Russ to be the starter. And then if Fields comes in and wins the job, that's great, but Russ is going to be the guy.
All these teams just have such – well, three out of the four just have such cruddy injury luck. I think the Steelers just find a way to win the games that they need to. That if Joe Burrow and the Bengals stay healthy, that –
I'm higher. I honestly, outside of the Burrow thing last year, the Bengals had a really good year.
It almost made the playoffs. Like Zach Taylor could have won Coach of the Year as well, going to the playoffs with three, four different quarterbacks.
I'm concerned with the defense. Mm-hmm. The defense did lose a lot, and their secondary last year was really bad. And Lou Anarumo, I don't want to say he's lost his fastball, but he does not look like the same. That did not look like the same defense that held Mahomes in check in two AFC championship games. They lose a ton. Again, the secondary is really where I'm concerned. But I think offensively, you lose Joe Mixon, you replace him with Zach Moss. You want to say that's a downgrade, that's fair. I think Mixon, you know, it's a running back thing. I think it's pick your poison. I think Mixon, he did some things well that probably Zach Moss doesn't, but I think vice versa. I think Moss probably does some things well that Mixon didn't, and that's why they were happy to let Mixon go. But I like what they did in the offensive line. They drafted one of the better tackles in the field, you know, the kid from Georgia who's going to protect Burrow. If Burrow's healthy, I don't see why this isn't a 10-win Bengals team. I don't. I mean, they have they play a last-place schedule. They open their first four games. They play the Chiefs, obviously, but it's after you play the Patriots. I mean, go pull up the Bengals schedule right now. How are they not 3-1? They could be 4-0. I could see them going into Kansas City winning that game, but they're definitely going to be 3-1. New England, Washington, Carolina. They're going to be 3-1.
That was another good point that I didn't mention with the Bengals is that their offensive line has to be able to protect Joe Burrow. If you're losing the battle in the trenches, you are not going to achieve the expectations that you want to have. And the Bengals are, you know, I think, still in that position of Super Bowl contenders. But if you got an offensive line that, you know, we still have the memories of how they played in the Super Bowl, they've got to find a way to keep Joe Burrow up, because if he takes hit after hit after hit, it wears down on him.
Yeah, I agree. I like what this Bengals team did. I think the kid they drafted from Bama, Jermaine Burton, I've heard a lot of really positive things about him in camp. Obviously, he's going to probably replace Tyler Boyd. We're going to be dealing with a lot of T. Higgins contract dispute talk throughout the season.
Well, not even T. Higgins, Jamar Chase.
Yeah, I think they'll figure out a way to get Chase signed. I think Higgins is the one that they're probably not going to be able to keep. He's going to be a casualty of, you know, just, you know, having too many good players and not being able to afford all of them. But after what happened with the fact that the Bengals were the last place team in this division and now they're favored to win it this year, I think that's kind of telling you everything you need to know. I'm down. I think Baltimore takes not a step back, but I don't think they will be as efficient. They're not going to win 14 games this year. And I would be shocked if Cleveland overachieved. I think Cleveland's going to be a 9-10 win team max. I think the floor is high because of the defense, but I think the ceiling is low because of Watson. I think the team with the highest ceiling in this division is Burrow, because we just don't know how healthy he is. If Joe's healthy, would be shocked if they won 13 games and beat Kansas City on the road week 2. It wouldn't shock me at all. The Lions went on the road and beat Kansas City early part in last season. Like, I would not be shocked if Kansas City lost to anyone in September just because of the Super Bowl hangover effect. And then you look at the back half of this schedule. I mean, they're going to have a lot of prove-it games, right? Right after that bye, Pittsburgh at Dallas on a Monday night. Then you get an easy one against Tennessee at home, then a primetime game against your in-state rival. Then those last two games could be cupcakes. I mean, they could walk to this division if they can keep Joe healthy. We'll continue to talk NFL. We'll sprinkle in some college football on the other side here on A Numbers Game. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is available now. It is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, preseason top 25, power ratings, proven systems, and more. Sign up today, receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 exclusive data like our splits. See all of our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe. Pick the plan that works best for you. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, we got Nick Whalen coming up in 15 minutes. We will talk a ton of AFC East, AFC North, which we just discussed a little bit. And maybe we'll even get in some NFL futures market stuff as well. Let's go back to college football for a minute, because our producer, Y. Tomchek, did such a good job getting some of these segments into the show. I want to make sure we give them their due. Let's get to this one. We didn't get to it in our first hour, which is, who will have more regular season wins? And I didn't do a ton of back work for this. I kind of wanted to be surprised by some of them and see what my initial gut reaction was. So let's pull up. Did you pull all these into one graphic, or are we going one by one?
Yes, all into one graphic.
All right, so let's throw the graphic up now on your screen, and let's talk through some of these, because I do think there's a couple interesting ones. I would say the one that stands out to me the most is the one that's clearly moved. No, the other Oklahoma USC's moved a bunch too. But I think Alabama, Michigan's an easy choice for me, and I know you're not going to like this, but I think Alabama significantly ahead of where Michigan is this year. One team brings back their quarterback. One team brings back most of their, I'll call them, offensive line depth, whereas I think Michigan's going through a little bit more of an upheaval this year. Oh. What's your take on it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, when you look at Alabama, I know both teams are replacing head coaches, but Alabama returns Jalen Milroe.
That's the key.
You know, they have the stability at the quarterback position, where Michigan, they're getting a brand new quarterback, whole brand new offensive line. I think there's probably one guy that maybe had some starts. They lose both their receivers in Cornelius Johnson and Roman Wilson, really the two guys that are coming back on offense that had the experience that were a big part of that national championship. Was Donovan Edwards, who had a great national championship game against Washington, and Colston Loveland, who I think could be in the category for top tight ends in the country. On the defensive side of the ball, they have a lot more pieces coming back, a lot of first-round talent, like a Will Johnson, a cornerback, Kenneth Grant, and Mason Graham. I really like the defensive line for Michigan. I think the defense is going to be their strong suit, where the offense is just going to try to find that rhythm. I don't know quite yet who's going to be the quarterback. I think it's Alex Orji is the favorite. So that game against Fresno State on August 31st is going to tell a lot, because they got to, because the next week you got Texas. I know it's going to be home, but Texas is another team that's kind of national championship or bust. So I would say, even though I mean, both conferences are so tough, Jared. It's like every week you've got a heavyweight battle. I would say Alabama is probably the bet here.
I would agree. The number has moved that way. I mean, Alabama's got that tough game against Georgia. Outside of that, I mean, I know LSU on the road, Death Valley, I'm sure it's going to be at night, but I don't see how LSU is anywhere near where they were last year. And then, of course, that game at Tennessee, Rocky Top's always tough, but they I think they're better than Tennessee. I think Kalen DeBoer is really the reason why I'm very high on Alabama this year, and it's not any talent or who they're bringing back. I just think DeBoer is pound for pound the best coach in the country, and now he gets the number one – all these resources at his disposal.
Yeah, that's – another reason why, just looking at it, I think Sharon Moore is going to be a great head coach. What he did for Michigan last year when when Harbaugh was suspended. But Kalen DeBoer has won at every place that he's been at. I mean, he made Fresno State one of the top teams in the Mountain West. He took a Washington team, what was in 2021, was awful. 2 years later, they're playing for a national championship. He got Michael Penix, that offense, to be just one of the scariest offensive units in the country. I think Alabama made the best hire that they possibly could with Kalen DeBoer. I know it's going to be a little bit challenging for him on the recruiting trail. I think we had Charlie Potter on last week on the Lombardi Line, who writes for Bama Online. Kalen DeBoer hasn't really recruited in the South, so that's going to be kind of the big thing for him. But other than that, dude's a winner.
Yeah, that's not an issue for me. I don't care what part of the country you're recruiting in. Can you coach? The recruiting with these SEC schools, it's not recruiting like it used to be. It's a business now. It's a business. Alabama has money. They're going to spend it. The other one that stood out to me here, and I'll bring this up because I'll give Zachary Cohen some credit. He's the only one that has the cojones to stand up in front of the Missouri behemoth, because every single person I talked to in the last couple of weeks is very high on Missouri. And I understand why. I think you've got the best receiver in the country in Luther Burden. You've got Brady Cook, who's a very experienced quarterback. You have a lot coming back. But the loss of the defensive coordinator is paramount, and I give Zachary credit for, again, standing in front of the very popular opinion that Missouri is going to be very good this year and go with an under on the Tigers. Well, if Missouri stays under their win total, I mean, how is Clemson not an immediate bet to have more wins than Missouri? Because let's just tailor the tape here. Clemson's got a pretty good quarterback, too. Kay Klobuchar, I know he's very unproven, but he's still a very talented quarterback. Obviously, Dabo and his recruiting tactics are not as modernized as some of the other teams with the transfers and et cetera, et cetera. But they play in a significantly easier conference. And my guess is they will have a significantly easier time navigating the conference than Missouri will in the SEC. So I think that's an interesting one, because when you look at Clemson's schedule, obviously they open with Georgia, so probably going to lose that game. But who are they dogs to the rest of the season?
What do you think about the Florida State game? Florida State loses, obviously, Jordan
Travis.
They're on the road.
They're probably a dog at Florida State, but not a significant dog. I think maybe a field goal plus. 3.5, 4.5. But again, it could change. It's early in the year. But let's just say they lose both of those games. Let's say Clemson goes 10-2. I would say decent chance Missouri goes 9-3. Mm-hmm. And what are the odds that Missouri goes 11-1 to beat Clemson's record, which is what would be required to win this bet? There's a lot of scenarios here where you would push this.
Eli Drinkwitz is going to get Coach of the Year if that's the case.
Like, you're obviously starting 4-0. I'll give you that. Then you go to A&M, who we just talked about, with Mike Elko, and who Zachary Cohen's very high on. I agree. I'm high on them, too. Then you go to Bama. You're a dog there. You go to South Carolina. That game might be a little bit tighter than you expect. At Mississippi State, probably you're a favorite in that game. You're probably a favorite against Oklahoma at home. I would say you're a dog twice this year. You're a dog at Bama. You're a dog at A&M. I don't know about out South Carolina. I'm off the top of my head. I don't know how good their rating is coming into the year. But I think both teams are a dog this year twice. Mm-hmm. So would you rather take your coin flips in the ACC or the SEC?
Oh, ACC. And I think one thing that I noticed, big theme in college football this year, Jared, is conference realignment.
Yes.
Who did the SEC get? Texas and Oklahoma, two powerhouse blue bloods. Who did the ACC get? Cal and Stanford. Cal and Stanford haven't really been, at the peak the last, you know, handful of years. And Missouri has to play Oklahoma. Granted, it's a home game, still a tough one. Where Clemson, they'll have to play Stanford. Who would you rather take in that game? I'm going to take Clemson over Stanford.
I agree.
I think 100%, if it's a coin flip market, both teams are dogs twice, Clemson and Missouri. And it's still a coin flip bet. I think it was minus 115 towards Clemson, so a little bit more than a coin flip. But you still get the ACC schedule compared to the SEC schedule. And I'm not saying Missouri is not going to be favored in a lot of their games, but that doesn't mean they're going to win all those games. And on average, the SEC talent is ahead of the ACC talent. I don't think there's any debate there. So I'm not surprised that you are seeing just a hair of love towards the Tigers here in this market. The other two, not really intrigued with Oregon, Georgia. I think both of those teams are going to be 11-win teams. I don't see a ton of scenarios where Georgia wins 12. I don't see a ton of scenarios where Oregon wins 12. I think the odds of that one pushing are probably pretty high, which is why it's priced minus 110 on both sides to me. Oklahoma, USC. I'm down on USC. Obviously, the market's down on USC. I'm kind of down on Oklahoma, though. I don't trust Brent Venables as a coach. I think they lost a ton on offense. They lost their quarterback.
Here's another thing I think to look at these markets, Jared, is what's the non-conference look like? Sometimes you get easy layups. How about USC's non-conference? They got to play LSU. They'll be here in Vegas. But then they got to play Notre Dame. I mean, those are two tough non-conference games. Their layup game in non-conference play is going to be Utah State,
who's not terrible.
But they just lost their head coach, so I don't know.
That's
they're going to have a little bit, I don't know how.
But as Mountain West teams go, they've been one of the more stable ones.
Home of Jordan Love, baby. Home of Jordan Love.
Amen to that. the rest of the USC schedule is manageable. I think UCLA's down. I think Nebraska's down. Washington's down. Rutgers, Maryland. Game against Penn State at home will be tough. They'll probably be a slight dog in that game. Maybe it's closer to a pick 'em. And then you get Notre Dame. I think the only bet I'm willing to make here is that Clemson one. I think I would bet Clemson minus 115 over Missouri because I think Clemson, based off of the conference they play in and maybe the public inflating the Missouri lines just a hair here as everyone besides our guy Zach Cohen seems to be high on the Tigers this year. Maybe Missouri's not as good as we all think. Always as good as we all think is Nick Whalen. He's next on A Numbers Game. All right, we are back here on VSiN, 30 minutes to go, which means we got to give you our best stuff. So let's bring in this gentleman, senior analyst from RotoWire. He is a host on SiriusXM NBA. His name is Nick Whalen. Follow him on X at Whalen with the L as a one. Nick, great to talk to you, pal, because we get to continue to wax poetic about my favorite division, the AFC East. And I keep going back and forth on the Bills. I think here's where I'm at with the Bills. I think Buffalo's defense is really good. I think Buffalo's offense has one of the best players in the sport. I just don't know how it all fits together because I think Sean McDermott can be a little bit wonky sometimes. And I think they play in a very difficult division with a very difficult schedule. And there's a lot of moving parts this year with the defense. So I've had people sell me on Buffalo, and it's like when someone says, hey, Jared, go watch this show. It's the best show on TV. That's like the best way not to get me to watch a show. So try to sell me on the Bills without selling me too hard because I've been sold so many times and I'm still not there yet.
Well, you guys know, I mean, I was out there, a month ago, you know, hanging with you guys at the D doing some live hits. And I'm lower on this Bills team than most, right? I think I am with you in that the sense that I get is that everybody's either trying to talk you in or out of the Bills. There's not a whole lot of like, I think that maybe they'll just win 9 or 10 games. I think this team is kind of flirting with danger this season. I don't love how this roster looks compared to years past. I think you look at the offensive side of the ball in particular, you got a nice ascending young tight end in Dalton Kincaid. That's great. You got a nice young running back in James Cook who took a step forward. You have arguably the second best quarterback in the NFL in Josh Allen. But what do you have at wide receiver, right? You didn't really go out and replace Stephon Diggs. Yeah, you go and get Keon Coleman early in round two, but you know, the early returns on him have been a little bit shaky in training camp. I think depending on a second round wide receiver to replace what Stephon Diggs brought you, even in a down year for Stephon Diggs, he's still a borderline elite receiver, right? I mean, he's still almost 1,200 yards, despite tapering off towards the end of the season, got off to a really hot start. I think he had 500 yard receiving games in the first 6 weeks of the season. asking Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Curtis Samuel, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, just a reminder, is in this receiving core. I think there's a chance that they take a step back offensively. And, you know, one of the things that really scares me about the Bills this season, it's a really, really difficult division, and they have a really, really difficult out-of-division schedule. The Jags, the Ravens, the Texans, the Chiefs, the Niners, the Rams, the Lions, all those teams are on the schedule out of division. And of course, you know, the Jets are not going to be a pushover this season. Assuming Aaron Rodgers is healthy, Miami should be just as good, if not better, than a season ago. There's a reason, guys, that, you know, this is forecasted as maybe the most difficult division race right now. It's the only division where we have three teams listed at 2-1 or shorter.
Yeah, the schedule does them no favors. It's last year, it was one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. This year, it's one of the toughest, and one of the biggest scheduling advantages for Buffalo is that late season winter kick. Well, look at the teams at the back half of the season that they play at home. None of them are cold weather. They're all cold weather teams. Patriots, Jets.
Right.
Like, you're going to Detroit indoors. You're going to the Rams indoors, and then you're going to New England. That's obviously a layup game in Week 18. But for the most part, the back half of their schedule is not as advantageous with the home games. And the front part of the schedule, they play four primetime games the first 6 weeks of the season. And they're not easy opponents, right? Dolphins, Jags on Monday night, then Ravens on the road, then you go play the Texans, then you're going back to Jets. I mean, there is a scenario here where they start 2-4. And I'm not saying they can't win the division after starting 2-4, but it's setting up to be one of those situations where I do think the floor is relatively stable because of Josh Allen and their defense.
Yep.
But I don't think the ceiling is very high for the Bills this year. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly how I view it, right? I think this is a team that I would be very surprised if they run away with this division. You know, I think it's a division that, much like last season, probably comes down to week 17, week 18. And, you know, you had to remember, Buffalo went through the doldrums midway through last season. They needed kind of this miraculous run at the end of last year just to make the playoffs, just to get to 11 wins. And if they do get off to a slow start, as you're suggesting, which is very possible given how that schedule lines up. I mean, they have a really, really tough stretch after Arizona, which is a very, very winnable game at home in week one. You got to go to Miami, which is kind of the equivalent of going to Buffalo in December, going to Miami in early September when it's going to be 92 degrees and 95% humidity. You got to play the Jags. You got to play the Ravens. You got to play the Texans and the Jets in consecutive weeks. I mean, it's really hard to, you know, imagine Buffalo coming out of that stretch feeling great about itself. And, you know, asking a team to kind of claw back in a really difficult division 2 years in a row, it's a little bit dicey to me. And, you know, in some ways this roster kind of reminds me of the one Aaron Rodgers year post Devontae Adams, right? Where he forces his way out to the Raiders. They don't really replace him. They brought in Christian Watson. You know, he showed some flashes. He was injured. He didn't really make the impact that they hoped he would in year one. And I think if Keon Coleman doesn't hit the ground running, you know, I know there are people in the fantasy community who are excited about Khalil Shakir, who still think Curtis Samuel is this underrated guy that we're, you know, going on like year six of maybe this is the year he breaks out. You're just asking a lot, you know, especially when you compare the Buffalo Bills to some of the other elite teams in the AFC, right? I mean, you have a big time hill to climb. If you're talking about this team as a Super Bowl contender, a lot of things have to go right for the Buffalo Bills beyond Josh Allen having an elite season. Just to be mentioned in that same category as teams like the Chiefs and the Bengals and the Ravens.
Let's go to another polarizing team, and it seems like there's three very polarizing teams in this division. I think the Dolphins are very intriguing to me. Last year, they faced one of the easiest schedules, and they faced the second most backup quarterbacks of any team in the NFL. And this year, they do not face any of those backup quarterbacks. They face actually one of the toughest schedules of opposing quarterbacks, and this is on the heels of replacing Vic Fangio and Christian Wilkins, and of course the secondary is very different. Howard's out, Fuller's in. They still have Jalen Ramsey. The defense is going to be tested this year. I think their offense is going to be good as long as Tua stays healthy. I think their offense is going to be good, but I don't know what the defense is going to look like. You obviously play in a division with Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen. You face a ton of other very difficult quarterbacks this year. It could be a scenario where the Dolphins are going to have to score 30, 35 points every week in order to win games, and I just don't know if that's sustainable.
You know, last year it was sustainable for about half of the season, and then, you know, the Dolphins offense kind of, you know, tapered off over the final, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, and that's kind of been their MO over the last couple of years. It feels like they have this kind of scheme advantage over teams early in the season, and then, you know, defensive coordinators tend to catch up and kind of catch wind of what they're doing as the year goes along. I mean, I think boom or bust is kind of the right word for the Dolphins. Yep. I think they probably have a higher floor than a true bust team. You know, it'd be shocking if this team won like 6 or 7 games, barring some major injuries. Like, I still think this is a very, very elite offensive roster. I mean, I don't know if there's a team in the league that has the level of, you know, kind of game breaking type of offensive players that the Dolphins do, but a lot of those guys are fragile, right? It felt like if you watch the Dolphins week in and week out last year, Jalen Waddle and or Tyreek Hill were constantly like limping their way to the sidelines. It was like, are they going to come back in? Are they not going to come back in? That's just kind of how this team is constructed. And you know, I'm also not completely sold that Tua Tagovailoa is just now going to be a healthy 16, 17 game quarterback the rest of the way. We're only 1 year removed from talking about Tua being like one concussion away, not only from missing significant time, but maybe like his career being over. And credit to Tua, credit to the Dolphins for doing a much better job of protecting him and keeping him away from those big hits last season. But I'm not ready to just kind of pencil him in as a guy that we can just say is going to be healthy going forward. And obviously if he goes down, they're going to be in big time trouble. They do have an easier schedule overall than the Buffalo Bills. But like you said, I mean, the chances that they end up facing as many battered quarterbacks as they did last season is pretty unlikely. I don't mind, you know, betting the Dolphins in this division. Like we said, all three of those teams kind of hovering around the plus 180 to 2-1 range. I think you could argue that Miami has the highest ceiling, especially offensively, of the three contenders in this division. But you're totally right to wonder about that defense. I mean, they lost some key pieces defensively, but at the same time, you also got to remember they only had Jalen Ramsey for a handful of games last year. I mean, he was out for the vast majority, basically the first three quarters of the season. And you know, I'm a Jags guy. Deep down, I still have a soft spot for Jalen Ramsey. I think when he is on, he is still one of the best defensive backs in the NFL. But again, you're relying a lot on star power. It's a top heavy Miami roster. And if those guys stay healthy, they're going to be really good. If they have two or three key injuries, then yeah, this could totally go south.
Yeah, I want to make sure we give the third and also equally polarizing team in this division its fair due, which is the New York Jets. So we will save our Jets analysis for the other side. But I will say this. Are we all in agreement here? The Patriots under 4.5 wins is really the best bet in this division?
Well, you know, we'll see what Joe Milton can do. He's been lighting up training camp over the past week. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I think the Pats are going to struggle. I mean, they got, who knows what's going on even with Matthew Judon, who's arguably their best defensive player right now. It's weird. You know, it's like what's kind of happened with the San Antonio Spurs over the last couple of years in the NBA, where you're just like, I'm not used to this team being a bottom feeder. It doesn't feel like the Patriot way or the Spurs way for this team to win, you know, 19 games in the Spurs case. But it's a new area, a new era of Patriots football. I think we have to kind of start to view this franchise differently. Belichick's out the door. Brady's been out the door. I'm with you. I think the Pats are going to be a bottom feeder.
That game at the Jets, week 3, rookie head coaches on Thursday Night Football in their first Thursday night game, 5-18 against the spread. Circle the Jets in that week 3 game. That is a bet to make very soon. All right, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Jets. My team, Nick's got some thoughts on it. We will wrap up a numbers game on the other side. Go to VSiN.com right now. Again, I was saying this earlier in the show, and I'm still on the page now because I need to do some research for tonight's game. There's a preseason game tonight. Matt Eumanns has the quarterback depth charts, all of them, for all 32 teams. Very useful information as we get ready for the preseason. All of that, plus best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, tools, and the betting guides. NFL College Football out now. It's all available to you at VSiN.com. All right, let's wrap up the show with Nick Whalen here, senior analyst for RotoWire, joins us via the Progressive guest line. Nick, let's get right into the Jets. Here's where I'm at with the Jets this year. I think they're the best team in the division, top to bottom, nose to toes, nuts and bolts. But obviously, when you have a 41-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury, it's hard for me to just shove all of my chips into the middle. But in a vacuum, with the defense as constructed, with Aaron Rodgers, the offensive line, which has been completely renovated during the offseason, this feels like a championship-caliber unit, but it's a 41-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury, and who knows when he's going to go off to Egypt again and do ayahuasca. So really hard for me to just shove all those long-term chips into the middle, but it feels like they're the right choice in the division this year in a vacuum.
I think there is a case to be made that somehow the Jets might be the safest of the three teams that we've discussed, and that really comes down to Aaron Rodgers' health. But it's part of what makes the AFC East so interesting, right? I mean, Buffalo has the best quarterback. The Dolphins, to me, have the best skill talent. The Jets have the best defense, right? They're all three teams that have three different strengths. And, you know, last year on a lot of levels felt like a disaster for the Jets. When you lose Aaron Rodgers two snaps into the season, that's just how it's going to go. But this team found its way into seven wins last year. Seven wins with Zach Wilson primarily functioning at quarterback. They beat the Bills. They beat the Eagles. They beat the Texans. Like, there are somehow good wins on this Jets schedule. And I think if you just insert Aaron Rodgers and assume he's going to be relatively healthy and look for the most part like the guy he's been even late in his career, he won two MVPs not that long ago. It's pretty easy to dream on the upside of this Jets team. And I for one hope Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. I don't hold a lot of vitriol for him, despite, you know, sitting here in the state of Wisconsin right now. I still want Aaron Rodgers to succeed as a football player, at least on the field this season. And, you know, I think we're going to see a completely different Jets team. We didn't even get a taste of what this team could be last season with Rodgers at the helm. I mean, it's a little bit like the Falcons and Kirk Cousins, right? In a lot of ways, where you're like, man, you're going from Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke. Kirk Cousins stays healthy. We could really see this offense take off on a level that we haven't seen in a long time. And that's how I feel about the Jets. You got an elite running back in Breece Hall. You got an elite wide receiver in Garrett Wilson. Obviously, the defense should be just as good, if not better, than it was a year ago. And the Jets, they get the benefit of that last place schedule, right? Yep. They have one of the softer schedules in the NFL this season out of division. Now you got to go to San Francisco in week one. That's going to be an incredibly difficult spot, but that is a stadium in which Aaron Rodgers has traditionally played well throughout his career. After that, though, a pretty nice run. I mean, there is a window to a 4-1 start here for the New York Jets. Week two, you're on the road at Tennessee and Will Levis. Week three, you're home for the Patriots. Week four, you get what could be a very bad Broncos team at home. And then week five, you go to the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I'm very high. So the bet that I made on the Jets that I would recommend making is for them to be the last undefeated team. You're getting that at like 16-1. Essentially, it's a week one bet at San Francisco. If they beat the Niners in week one, which they're about a 2-1 dog right now, about a 5-point dog, then the rest of the schedule opens up. They do play right out of the gate. They play a three-game, 11-day stretch right there. Or actually, 10-game stretch. The first game's Monday night. Monday, Sunday, yep. Thursday. But if you're going to play a three-game stretch in 10 days, wouldn't you want it to be the first 3 weeks of the year when you're completely fresh? And also, for Aaron Rodgers, do you think like the preseason not playing is the right decision? I kind of think yes, because who are you trying to prove? Like, why does he need to play in the preseason besides vanity? I mean, it makes sense to just conserve all the energy for those first three games. You get through those first two games, two tough games at San Francisco. And then I know Tennessee's not tough, but it's on the road back-to-back short week. Like, the schedule really opens up for the Jets if they can figure out a way to start fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think you can win some of those games just with your defense, right? It's like, I think the argument against Aaron Rodgers playing in the preseason one is that, okay, is this because he's still dealing with some lingering Achilles issues? That's a whole separate discussion and a bigger concern. But, you know, I think the other concern would be, all right, has he had enough time to build the chemistry necessary with these pass catchers? It's Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to be fine. He's cycled through, you know, hundreds of receivers throughout his career. I don't worry about that too much. But even if the offense gets off to a semi-slow start, yeah, you're probably going to need to put up close to 30 if you're going to go beat the Niners on the road. But, I mean, that defense could hold the Titans and the Patriots to like 20 combined points, right? I wouldn't worry too much about those early season games. You could say the same thing about the Broncos and the Vikings games. And, yeah, you get the Bills in week six. But even after that, you get a nice two-game run at Pittsburgh. And then you get the Patriots again. I mean, there's a really nice window here for the Jets to get off to a nice start. And, you know, I think the offensive line is still a concern. That's something we have to be worried about. They did address it. They got Olu Fashanu in the first round. They went out and shopped and brought in some veterans in free agency as well. I mean, they're at least making the right moves to attempt to address that. We'll see how effective that ends up being. And, you know, the other kind of sneaky thing that makes me like the Jets is this is a team that is 100% all in. That's what you sign up for when you bring in Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, as we've already seen, has influence on this roster. The wide receiver core is thin, right? Beyond Garrett Wilson, you're asking a lot of Mike Williams to do something he's almost never done, which is stay healthy for a full season. They could be a Davante Adams team. I think that is still out there. I think that is a real possibility that the New York Jets add somebody like Davante Adams midway through the season. And obviously, if they bring him in and say week six or week seven, we're feeling a lot better about this team.
Yeah, Garrett Wilson, I love. Mike Williams, I'm unsure about. Xavier Gibson and Malachi Corley, the rookie from Western Kentucky, who I was told looks pretty good in camp. Obviously, very unproven. And again, this is a team last year that had arguably the worst quarterback situation in the league, still won 7 games. And how about this? Second highest percentage of snaps facing top 10 quarterbacks last year. So not only did they have the worst quarterback situation, they faced one of the most difficult gauntlets of opposing quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Both of those things should regress back to the mean in both directions this year. I think 10 wins is the, if Rodgers is healthy, 10 wins feels like the floor. I feel like 10 wins is a very healthy floor for a team that has the talent and the expectations. The ceiling to me is significantly higher. I think they have the highest ceiling of any team in the division, and I know the Dolphins have a high ceiling too, but I just feel like if this Jets team, maybe it's my bias speaking, if this Jets team brings it all together, they are more of a polished Super Bowl contender because of the defense than the Dolphins are. And the Bills obviously have a little bit more upside at quarterback, but I have questions about their defense. Like, you could make the case that the Jets are the most balanced. Is that fair to say? The Jets the most balanced team in this division.
Yeah, I think if you assume the positive side of the Aaron Rodgers debate and you think he's going to stay healthy, then I think there's no question they're the most balanced team in this division. I think you could argue that maybe Miami has like slightly higher regular season upside, but I don't trust the Dolphins in a playoff setting. The later the year goes, the worse that team gets. You need a defense. You need a borderline elite defense if we're talking about a Super Bowl contender. And the Jets absolutely have that, right? I mean, they were third in defensive EPA last season. I think there's room for some progression in terms of turnovers. This was not necessarily a high turnover defense a year ago. And you think, I mean, you probably watch more Jets football than anybody. I mean, for this defense to rank where it did and be put in the positions
incredible.
That it was week in and week out, over and over and over, just being asked to single-handedly win these games. You know, offense is going 3 and out, 7 drives in a row. The defense is spending 70% of the game on the field. I think just having competency at quarterback, obviously it's going to boost this offense tremendously, but I think it's going to do wonders for this defense as well.
The game against Houston obviously comes to mind where they shut down C.J. Stroud. They held the Chiefs to 23 points in a very tight game early in the season at MetLife. They held the Eagles to 14 points in a win at MetLife a little bit later in the season. I think the Jets, again, the health of Aaron Rodgers obviously being the number one thing here. I do think the Jets are going to win the division this year, and I think that last undefeated team bet makes a ton of sense. Nick Whalen, we really appreciate the time, pal. Good luck this year. When's the next time you're in Vegas?
I'll be in Vegas in less than 3 weeks, guys, coming out for the big contest weekend, the football panel down at Stadium Swim. We'll be out there doing live radio, live podcasts, and I'm sure we'll hop on with you guys as well. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Senior analyst at RotoWire, of course, follow him on X at Whalen. The L is a 1. Good luck with your travels, and good luck on the golf course, too, when you come out here.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll see you soon.
Good stuff. Nick Whalen, there he goes, from RotoWire, of course, also does great work for SiriusXM. Yeah, I think if I had to stack it this year, I think the Jets are my number one power-rated team. And I know the power ratings officially might not agree with that, but I put Jets 1, Bills 2, Dolphins 3, and I have the Dolphins missing the playoffs.
What is your excitement level for this team?
Sky high.
Is this the best since it's been since, like, what, Brett Favre?
It was as high as it was last year until they stuck a dagger in my heart within the first 10 minutes of the game. Here's the difference this year. it's like a do theory. What are the odds that Aaron Rodgers gets hurt in the first game? Again. Like, we just that like that just happened.
Or
like,
the more important question: who's the backup for the Jets?
It's significantly better. It's Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah,
significantly better backup scenario this year than last year, and I think that's why the floor is significantly higher. Because even if Rodgers gets hurt, I believe Tyrod Taylor is a big upgrade from Mr. Zach Wilson. Definitely a big upgrade over Tim Boyle. Appreciate Nick Whalen's time. Appreciate all of our guests, everyone in the back as well. Great stuff. Wyatt, we'll catch you tomorrow. This is a numbers game on Visa.